The whole team never quit mindset started for me when we lost our daughter, our 16-year-old, and it was at that point where I realized how short life is, and you only get one shot at this life.
Team never quit radio.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the TNQ Podcast. I'm your host, Marcus Luttrell. Every week, it's my job to fire you up, to ignite the legend inside of you, and to push you to your greatness. Join me every week as I take you into my briefing room with some of the most hard-charging people on the planet. They're going to show you how to embrace the suck of life, teach you the values of working your ass off, and charge through whatever life throws at you. This is the Team Never Quit Podcast. So buckle up, Buttercup.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of the Team Never Quit Podcast. As always, thank you guys for listening and watching, and please don't forget to hit that like and subscribe button wherever you get your show. So today, before we kick it off with our very special guests, let's go to our usual Patreon question of the day, which is, what is a new skill or hobby that you want to learn this year?
For Marcus and I, we both made this kind of agreement in 2024, we're going to go back to school. We want to just either get a certificate or start a degree program or something. But
no, we're going all the way back. We don't have to have something with that.
Are you going for your master's?
We haven't figured it out.
Yeah, sure.
Doctorate.
We haven't figured it out yet.
Doctor in philosophy. That's what I want to go after.
But we want to learn something new. We just haven't figured out exactly what it is.
Real estate.
We do. That is another thing.
Okay, so check it out. Yeah, go ahead.
I took real estate classes in 2008, finished all of the classes, and never took the test.
Well, say the story of
you and me both.
Mom, say why you never got to take the test.
I didn't take the test because of Hunter.
It's your fault, Hunter.
Yeah, it's all of Hunter's fault. I was at the place to take the test. I had just signed in. And they tell you have to turn off your phones and everything. I was just about to turn off my phone. And I get a text, like multiple texts from Hunter's school that he had been in an accident and I needed to meet them at the hospital.
Wow.
So Hunter was playing football, not in a game or anything, just being silly.
Just before school.
Throwing the ball before school or whatever. And he was playing barefoot on a muddy playground, and his foot slid underneath chain link, and it ripped into the top of his foot, and he had to get stitches. So I never went back after that. Hunter got stitches, and that's it. It's been since 2008. And I need to go. I just want to finish it. It's finishing something.
Well, you're
I started.
Way ahead of the curve already. I mean,
2024 finished what you started. Something. So he started his scuba diving quals, and didn't finish up. But our youngest have come of age now, so we're all going to go back and get it done.
Yeah. That's been on our list too. We
actually have a friend that has a scuba diving
school
class.
Wrong one again.
Yeah.
I mean, that's all of our friends go scuba diving. They go on these trips to all these great destinations. I mean, I think that'd be. That'd be something worthwhile pursuing for sure. I've always wanted to get my pilot license.
Oh, that's
I got
neat.
A buddy who's doing that. He started and he hadn't finished it. Matter of fact, Trey, if you're listening, your ass has to finish. You got to get your wings by the time 2024 is over.
Are you going
to
do it?
I mean,
he's got a couple flying hours.
Got some flying
You've already
hours.
Been up?
I've been up.
Oh,
been up.
You got to. Come on, man.
I come from a long line of pilots in
that's
my family.
That's even worse.
So you don't
want to be the guy at the damn reunion.
I'm the first generation that hasn't done it in three generations.
Okay, so I ran across another one of you. I'm sorry I talk like that, man. But I was thinking again, you pilots, your own thing with the wings and all that stuff like that. He was third generation, and he was in the middle of it. He hadn't finished. And he goes, when I go back for like Christmas, I get reminded.
I'm sure.
Every year.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, you need to do that.
I sit at a table every Friday with a bunch of pilots, and they talk about this stuff.
I mean, it's exhilarating. I mean, I don't know. Have y'all ever been up?
No, I have no interest.
You ever been in a little Cessna?
Bro, I'm underworld.
Well, I mean, I know
man.
You've
I
been up.
I mean, and then there's beach right here, okay? So
I like my feet on the ground. Yeah. I'm good.
Man, those little Cessnas are that's the one thing that's I got to get over. You know, is just being in that little small plane. But
yeah,
if I can get past that.
See, I think like if guys like if we got into that, like the speed flying, the Red Bull flying.
Oh yeah.
If you got comfortable actually doing that, I don't think you'd get me out of there.
Man, my grandpa had a Stearman. Yeah, you know what a Stearman is? It's those old biplanes. It's like open air. So,
oh, wow.
Crowd dusters.
Yeah, just an open air biplane, kind of like the Red Baron. And he would take me up when we were kids and do loops, all kinds of stuff.
Care. I mean, they flew.
He was a World War II pilot. Planes. And he,
that's
he
was, crazy.
He was also a pilot for Harry Truman, presidential pilot.
Oh, my gosh. So, how cool. Really? He
worked his way all the way up to.
That's a great story, man.
One of the
is
top
he still around?
Pilots. No, he passed away when I was 17 or 18. And a guy that I admired my whole life. I mean, he's a guy that I've looked up to, helped raise me. And he had more flight hours than any pilot in that era.
Wow.
Because he was not a lot of combat, but he was flying airplanes from the United States over to the theaters of war on both theaters, over to Germany and the Pacific. And so he was certified to fly every single kind of plane that the military had.
Wow.
And he would just constantly be shuttling these planes back and forth to put onto the front lines. And then, and so he racked up all these hours. He had the most experience of any pilot. And so he was chosen to be Harry Truman's pilot.
How cool is that?
I mean, back in the day, before all these electronics and stuff like that, like a pilot was like a driver. I mean, there's some people, everyone can do it.
Mm-hmm.
But there are people who are really good at it and are smooth at it.
Mm-hmm.
Like you wouldn't even tell you were in the air.
Oh,
and then
yeah.
There's some, you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah.
Like those are the guys that you wanted.
Yeah.
Right. But how much combat? I was like, hey, man, how he flies is so smooth. You don't even know you've left the ground or touched it.
Yep. I wish I would have been in that situation. When the only time I remember is when we were, you know, going up in the Stearman and it was not smooth.
No, those are no.
It was.
I think that's like a roller coaster for enjoyment.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Yep.
I would
yep.
Be
for
so
sure.
Scared.
But no, grew up on military bases. My dad was Air Force officer. So moved all around the country. You know, lived in Hawaii, lived in Montana, Ohio, and then ended up in Texas.
We're at Hawaii.
Honolulu.
Yeah.
Hickam Air Force Base.
Yep.
Awesome.
I know it well.
Yeah, and it's a beautiful place. Fortunately, I remember it was my earliest childhood memories, but got back over to the States, came to Texas when I was, I guess, 6 or 7, and then floated around from there. Ended up back in the College Station area where my dad's from Hearn.
Yeah.
Which is just outside
that's
of college.
That's where my
station.
People
are
from.
Yeah.
Really?
That's his people are from Hearn.
No way.
His mom was born in Hearn.
I bet a lot of them know
related.
Each other.
Oh, yeah.
I got the book in the house.
You might be cousins.
I got the lineage in the house.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's a crazy small world.
You have no eye? Well, yes, you probably do.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I see this in here, man. This is a little wisdom coming in.
It's Robertson County. And so he... Dad was an Aggie, so he ended up going back to after he retired from the Air Force. He went to work for the university for the Corps of Cadets, and did public relations there. So.
I got that.
You gonna do the Corps of Cadets?
Not Corps of Cadets, but I am going
future
to
future Aggie.
I'm already committed.
Awesome!
Congrats!
Thank you.
Did you know, fun fact, little Texas tidbit here, that Hearn, I believe it was Hearn or Caldwell, was supposed to be the home of A&M?
Really?
Yes.
No, did not
It's
know
either
that.
Hearn or Caldwell. But they were supposed to actually build the university there, and somewhere, it got vetoed.
Hmm.
Like, the town vetoed it, and they ended up having to put it in Bryan, College Station, and... At the time, whether it was Hearn or Caldwell, was a booming town.
Yes.
And after the choice to make the university move, it actually, like...
But they regretted that.
Yeah, it fell. The economy
the town fell apart.
Yeah.
Yep.
When... And they vetoed it because it was booming so much, and they didn't... They thought that the... presence of a university would just bring in, you know, too many kids and all that kind of stuff, and they didn't want it, but it ended up being a horrible decision for them.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great university.
Tell us how you settled in Magnolia and when y'all met and about your kids and everything.
So we, what brought me to Houston was I'm in the construction, residential construction industry, and my brother was working down here for a builder, and I was finishing up school and up at Texas A&M Commerce, and was working for a builder out there as well, and he basically helped me get a job down here so I could be closer to family and make more money, and so that's what brought us to Houston. We kind of when we first moved here. We moved to Spring, and so we lived in Spring, Texas first, then we lived in Tomball, and then we've been back in Spring for what, maybe 12 years, 13 years?
Yeah.
And so own a business here in Magnolia, and we just
New
fell
Magnolia
in love.
New Magnolia or old Magnolia?
Well, it's kind of all over Magnolia. In fact, it was...
it's your mafia.
It's, yeah. In fact, it's a weird thing.
Because we live in the best spot. Those towns you named are all great. I feel like we're old country out here, man. It's awesome.
It's great. The people out here, we love working with them. We actually moved our offices to the Woodlands, but it's you know,
about
it's all
that place.
I mean, it's
the way
great.
Things grown up.
It's
that mall, the way that whole town with the Riverwalk and everything is amazing.
Oh, it's incredible. And they're trying to do that in Spring.
Eggs on World, whatever.
Yeah, Springwoods.
Springwood.
They're trying to duplicate that in Springwoods, which is. Just technically Spring, but it's all one big place. But yeah, it's
that place is unbelievable.
You're talking about Exxon?
Yeah.
The structures, when you walk in there and the size of that building with the waterfall,
it looks
like something out of the Avengers.
It is next world.
Probably what it's from, actually, knowing the Exxon boys. They probably built that to specs.
That thing is it's like the eighth wonder of the world, man. The money that Exxon has, man, it's incredible.
Back in the day, what business do you have?
We do outdoor living, which is basically just custom backyards. Everything
cool.
From pools to patios to outdoor kitchens and just kind of the backyard, the outdoor living, you know.
Yeah.
Trying to improve people's quality of life. I mean, a lot of people want to, especially here in Houston, want to live outdoors and be in their backyard and be outside. And so we just kind of build them a space that.
So can you help them with the idea or do they have to have one?
No, we do all the design for them. I mean, we have some great designers that do
so
the 3D modeling.
Miyagi, Mr. Miyagi, the backyard. Like you can't.
Man,
is that what you're telling me? Because you're telling me that, bro. If I'm speaking your language,
you're definitely speaking Miyagi. I was born in Okinawa. So,
okay.
My dad was
actually
lived
knew
there.
That. That's why I threw that. Like that, bro.
That's in the classified
file. Yeah, it's intense, right? That's my file right there.
Yep. I would love to build something like that.
Marcus's dream.
Bro.
I mean, dream have something like Mr. Miyagi's tea garden thing.
The backyard from Count of Monte Cristo when he comes down in there, and then the Miyagi backyard. You can splice those two things together. It'd probably be a place to.
Yeah, that's and then we'll throw some of the Exxon in there too.
Yeah, right. That's in front.
Yeah,
we
need sponsors for that.
Yes, ma'am.
That's so funny. Hunter took a class in landscape design at LSU.
Did landscape architecture?
Yeah, he was.
That was pretty fun.
That is pretty cool.
Fun. It's called hard work. I did it my whole life.
I started down that road. I started down that road of architecture and. School of architecture and all that. And I just, I enjoyed it, but I don't think I would have been able to make a career out of it and sitting. I like to be outside too. I like to be outdoors. And so sitting there on a computer all day just wasn't in my future. But
yeah.
It's incredible. It's fascinating.
Different type of human. We're different. There's some of us down here can't do that.
It takes a special person.
We physically cannot do it, but the whole thing that goes into being able to sit there and repetitively do that over and
day
over
in,
again,
day out,
day in, day
for
out,
years, is right. it takes a special individual, and we need those individuals.
I never talk smack. Right. Exactly. Never talk smack about it. I'll keep my ass outside with you, the hard work, as long as you do yours, and we keep that mutually exclusive.
I mean, they're the ones that have the vision, man, and they people like us just make it happen. But it's
what's the name of your business?
It's Magnolia Patio and Pool.
Okay.
Yep.
All right.
One of the highest rated in the area. So
awesome.
Take a lot of pride in what we do, but been in business 14 years. But the whole team never quit mindset started for me when really when we lost our daughter and our 16-year-old. And it was at that point where I realized how short life is, and you only get one shot at this life. And I was like, I've seen a lot of my friends that were way less smart than me, weren't as hard as workers as me, doing way bigger things. And I was like, why can't that be me? Mm-hmm. You know, that's when I really decided to grow my company and things really took off for it. And at the same time, we were also building a foundation in our daughter's name. And so we've kind of doing that simultaneously over the last 6 years, but it's,
I talk to a lot of men when we get into situations and they ask themselves that question. It's almost like a program in there. When that freaking phrase pops up in your window, then you know you've hit a shift.
It was like a light switch went off, you know, or on. Is it off or on? Went on.
It came on.
I mean, it just it was like an awakening, man, and going through something as tragic as losing a child, set off a fire inside of me. And
do you mind going into the story of what happened with her?
No, not at all. Let's start from the beginning.
We met, he had dated a girl in Iola. She was a year younger than me. So we had mutual friends, but never really like had met, hung out, you know, were introduced until, we did meet at a club in Bryan.
It was at a bar. It's like
at a bar.
Like a good country song.
Which is not there anymore. At a bar. It's closed, but,
which one was it?
It was called
Rodeo 2000.
Yeah. In Bryan. Yeah. It's long.
This is back in the 1900s too, right?
Yeah, yes. Back in the 1900s.
Rodeo 2000, back in the 1900s. Oh, right. Yeah, right?
So we met there and just started talking and just were like inseparable. And then we ended up getting pregnant with Kaylee probably like a year later. And so we had her in 2001. And he was trying to go to school. I was trying to go to school. I just was really struggling with, you know, still being basically a teenager and a mom and school and all of that. And one of my teachers, they were starting a surgical tech program at St. Joseph Hospital, like accreditation through them. And so I was like, that's cool. She said, you should come to the orientation. So I went. And I loved it, and I told my mom, and she was like, you know that, like, has, you know, there's blood and all this stuff. And I'm like, yeah. She was like, okay. So I did it, loved it, so that's what I did. And so I kind of supported him while he went to college. And then we actually got married when Kaylee was 4. Mm. She was our flower girl.
Oh, I love that.
So, and then we kind of moved around a little bit with him getting a job and then
transferring schools and, yeah, you know, and all that stuff. And I'll tell you, having kids, especially at a young age, it definitely gives you a whole new sense of purpose.
Oh, it changes everything.
It's a game changer. I mean, she taught me how to be a man.
And girls, the daughters are completely different.
Yeah.
Yes.
We were talking about this earlier. It's like there's when you're at home and there's the gap. And then as soon as that kid hits the ground, you shift.
Yes.
Some people can stretch that gap out. Some people start real quick.
Yeah.
But
it lit a fire under me.
It does.
For sure.
Right?
How old were you?
I had to grow up.
When you had her?
I was 20.
Okay.
Got pregnant with her 19, had her when I was 20.
I was 21 when she was born. And I had, you know, took some time off, didn't finish school right away. I finished school when I was 25. Mm-hmm. So I, you know, was kind of in and out of school. I would, you know, take breaks to work and then go back to school, take breaks, save up a little bit, go back to school, and, you know, eventually finished. But, you know, that girl taught me a lot about life, more than I think I would have ever taught her, you know, as far as learning how to love somebody other than myself, you know, more than myself. And not that I didn't love Wendy. But it's different with kids.
Different.
It's just,
yeah.
It's
just different.
Yeah.
It's yeah, especially having a daughter, and you know, she just she was such a special kid from day one. I mean, she was the kind of person that would, even from a young age, she could talk to anybody. She was like an adult. She would go into a room and make her presence felt. You know, she was just a outgoing, bubbly, just a light in a dark room. And she just had this big personality, this big smile, loud laugh, was just larger than life.
Yeah, she was always very witty. She was fun to pick on because she'd, you know, just give it to you right back and just laugh. And,
those are the best. Yes. The ones that can do that.
Yeah.
When you hit them with something, they come back at it. Yeah. They're fun to have around.
Yeah.
But she also didn't mind being the butt of the joke. You know, if she had to make herself, you know, the butt of the joke to make you laugh or smile, her whole goal in life was just to make people laugh. And, you know, I actually had an opportunity to have a really deep conversation with her the week before she passed. And I asked her, I was like, what do you want to be remembered? How do you want to be remembered to your friends here in high school? She said, I just want to be somebody that was remembered by making people laugh and smile and remembered for my sense of humor. So, I mean, that's kind of how she lived her life. She just really wanted to make an impact on others. And as she got older, you know, she never met a stranger. She was involved in a lot of things, a lot of charity organizations, volunteer hours, very involved in the church, going on mission trips and things like that. And she loved volleyball, played volleyball. She was a 4.3 GPA student, wanted to be a doctor. That's what she wanted to do with her life, is
dermatologist.
Be a dermatologist. Why did she want to be a dermatologist?
Because all girls are obsessed with skincare.
Yes, that had a part of it. But did you ever, have y'all seen that Dr. Pimple Popper?
Yes.
Oh my gosh. She found that, she was obsessed and she loved it.
I haven't watched it. That, yeah, but I know exactly what you're talking about.
Oh my gosh.
She was, when you say that, everyone's like, yeah, I know exactly what that is.
She was obsessed with that.
She had eczema when she was younger. And I think she just always was fascinated by curing skin stuff. And, and she was just, you know, really into makeup too when she got a little older.
Well, but, what girl isn't though?
Yeah.
Our 11-year-old is obsessed with skincare. She hasn't gotten into makeup yet, but she is obsessed with all the moisturizers and exfoliators. And I'm like, I didn't know one thing other than bar soap when I was 11.
Yeah, me either. But it's, I think all of them are really getting into it, and at a lot younger of an age too.
Yeah.
It's not a bad thing.
Yeah, now it's just the world's opened up.
She really just wanted to be able to help others, and she really was fascinated by skincare and wanted to be a doctor. But later in life, when she got a little older, she was serious. She wanted to go to A&M, and she wanted to start school there. I don't know where she would have ended up, but you know, after that. But true Aggie by heart, and she went into her junior year, and it was right around the time of our son's birthday.
Yeah, his birthday is the 24th, and her accident was the 28th.
Mm-hmm. And so it was Halloween weekend, and she was she asked if she could go to a party with some friends, and we said, sure. You know, as long as you're not drinking, you know, if you think that you can't handle that responsibility, if you think you can't go to this party and not drink, then don't drive, you know. We'll take you, or you get a ride, whatever. And so we thought she was going to be driving to the party. In fact, she was getting ready. We were all getting ready. We were going to our own Halloween party with some of the parents of I coached youth football and baseball at the time, and a lot of the parents were having their own little get together, little costume party. So we were all getting ready, and she was doing everybody's makeup, and we ended up leaving, and then she was going to leave not long after us. And
Her friend came over, and it was her and her friend going, and the party was only like two neighborhoods behind ours, and we know that family very well, and the parents, you know, were going to be there. And
yeah, it was a mile away, or 1.1 miles or something like that. So we're like, you know, just through a residential neighborhood, no big deal. Well, we get a call. We're already at this other party, and we have an app called Life 360. Mm-hmm. I don't know if y'all are familiar. I'm sure a lot of parents out there that are listening are very familiar with this, but we get an alert on Life 360. But actually, we got a phone call, right? It was Leah's mom saying that the girls had been in a crash, and we looked on her phone, and it had just gotten the alert, and saw that she was just a couple blocks from our home. I mean, it was, you know, right outside of our subdivision is Rothwood Drive, and there's some baseball fields right there, and it's a 30 mile an hour road, And it just kind of goes between neighborhoods and kind of connects one neighborhood to another. So very dark road. But so we're like, okay, maybe she pulled out and got T-boned or something. You know, no big deal. We're not thinking the worst. I mean, I know Wendy, you were probably panicking more than I was. Pretty calm. I was like, you know, it was no big deal. She's trying to call Kaylee and can't get her on the phone. And but I'm like, hey, just calm down. It's going to be fine. You know, and then we pull onto Rothwood Drive and we see just every kind of first responder you can imagine. Ambulances, fire trucks, police cars, tow trucks, you know, all the flashing lights. And we're like, okay, this isn't just a minor deal. You know, we jumped out of the vehicle and took off running and towards the scene. And at the time, I had a friend that worked for the fire department. I mean, he's still my friend, but he was working for the fire department. He was on the scene. His name's Dustin Krager, and he worked for Spring Fire Department. And I saw him. He knew my daughter, and I could just see the look on his face. And I knew that it was bad. And he basically was stopping me from going over there. And I was just, you know, screaming, "Where's my daughter? You know, where's Kaylee?" And he just was shaking his head like he just couldn't tell me. You know, he just couldn't bring himself to tell me. And I don't really remember, but I was told that I was taken to the ground by a bunch of first responders. And you know, and then he had to break the news to me. So it just crushed me. I mean, it's the worst thing that I can imagine happening to a parent. I mean, it's a parent's worst fear is losing a child. And just, you know, to look over and see your baby under a white sheet is just an image that I'll never forget. And it's just something that haunts us. But we didn't think it was real. I mean, I just remember Wendy the whole night saying, this isn't real. And, you know, we see a car that's flipped upside down, and it was a black vehicle. She had a black vehicle. So we assumed it was her vehicle. Well, we, after the hours that we were on the scene and finally waiting for the medical examiner to come and take her away, I wasn't going to leave the scene until that was all wrapped up. And then we went back to our house, which, you know, just right around the corner, two blocks from home. And I see her vehicle in the driveway. And I was like, And by the way, we never lifted that sheet up. Mm-hmm. So we were just going off of what we were being told, that she had passed away on the scene. And so we pull up and we're like, wait a minute, her vehicle's here. Who was that? Like, we were never told that she wasn't in her vehicle. And so at that point we're like, well, maybe this is just a big misunderstanding, you know? And then, I don't know, about an hour later, the officer came and brought all her personal belongings and stuff, her purse, her phone, or mm-hmm. her just like a wad of cash, like some $1 and $5 bills and things. And so, you know, that was kind of that's when it was just, okay, this is real.
So she rode with a friend.
So what happened? Well, I remember when we got on the scene and you were fighting through to get through, I turned and I looked to the side and I saw one of her friends. It was a guy and his mom, and they were standing there, and he just looked white as a sheep. And I was just like, why is he here? Like, how did he even know about this? I was confused, but then, you know, that, like, just was in the back of my mind after that. But when the officer came to the house and told us, you know, that she was in the car with other kids, she wasn't driving, she was in the back seat, then we started to get, like, the story. And so she didn't want to drive because I guess she was like, okay, you know, might have some drinks at the party. So she and her friend Leah called their two of their friends, which were two guys that, you know, we've known for a long time. We're friends with them. And so they came and picked the girls up. And the driver didn't know the roads very well. So he went out the front of the subdivision and down the road. And Kaylee was like, no, it's back that way. So he did a U-turn and then went down that Rothwood Road, which was very dark, very windy. And, you know, he didn't know the road very well. And so he had kind of veered off on the curb and it, you know, it flipped.
He was going too fast around the curve. That curve is very hard to see. There wasn't signage up. It was just a dark, not really a striped road. And it kind of comes up like over this hill. And then as soon as you're there, you can't see. If you're not driving the speed limit, it's a bad deal. There's been multiple deaths on that curve. And so she wasn't the first one, and there's been others since then. So it's not, but you know, he was going a little too fast. He went off the road. There's a driveway there with a culvert. The car hit the culvert and flipped end over end, and she was ejected out of the back window. But
she was the only one not buckled. So all the kids came over, you know, to the house afterwards, and one of them had a cut on his hand from trying to climb out the window. The other one had a little scrape, you know, that was it. That was the extent of their.
And, you know, she was very good about wearing her seatbelt. I wasn't good about wearing my seatbelt. She would always remind me to put my seatbelt on when we got in the truck. All the kids had buckled up in the car when they got in the car. But when she got on Rothwood Drive, she wanted to take a selfie with her friend in the back seat. So she unbuckled a slide over in the back and took the photo. And before she had the chance to get back in her seatbelt, I don't know if she would have or not, but she had slid over to take that photo, and
that's when it happened.
Just a few seconds later, the crash happened. And so all the other kids walked away with no injuries, really. I mean, I think one of the kids cut his hand climbing out of the car, but we know she would still be here if she had her seatbelt on. Mm-hmm. It's one of those things that, you know, a seatbelt isn't going to save your life in every crash, but it certainly gives you the best chance to survive, you know. Mm-hmm. And so your odds go up exponentially if you have your seatbelt on. And so
how old was she?
She was 16.
She was 16. Oh.
Junior in high school. Very you know, popular girl, not just at her school, but just through her, you know, her work through church and volleyball and all the stuff that she was involved in. She had lots of friends at lots of schools, and so this was a big impact on the community. You know, the community had just 2 weeks before had lost, there was a football player that had died in a crash a couple weeks before hers. And so it was kind of a bad deal for the kids. A couple days later, I was out there at the scene of the crash, and we went out there to put a cross up. You know, a wooden cross that we made. And a few hours later, got a phone call from a neighbor saying there's got to be a couple hundred kids out there at the crash site. And I said, well, let me go out there, and I'm going to go out there and talk to them. And I'm not a big public speaker. You know, I've never been really comfortable with public speaking or anything like that, or talking in front of crowds, but I just felt like these kids needed to hear a message of how important it is to be safe in the car and to speak up if somebody's doing something unsafe. Have the courage to, when it comes to your safety, you know, have the courage to stand up and say something, you know, hey, slow down, or hey, put your seatbelt on, or, you know, look out for each other when you're in the car. So I went out there to give them we're hurting, and I just felt like they needed that message. And it was so well received and made such a big impact. I was like, you know, I need to do this more. I need to do more of this. And I told them, you've got to be selfish when it comes to your safety. You know, be selfish about your safety. And they created this hashtag, and it kind of went wild. And then we were trying to plan a funeral for our daughter, and I was trying to make sense of it. You know, trying to find answers. I had a million questions in my mind. How did this happen? What led to this? How did we get here? How many other people are impacted by this? How many other families are out there dealing with this kind of tragedy? And so I just, you know, I can't sleep. You know, I'm just doing research, trying to make sense of it. And I was like, you know, so I did did find out a lot of information that I didn't know before, and figured out how big of a problem it really is. And I was like, wow, we need some kind of ribbon to use at her funeral. You know, there's a ribbon for everything. Mm-hmm. There's a ribbon for every kind of cancer. I mean, all these different causes of death have ribbons. But I was like, you know, this is the leading cause of death in America for teenagers and people ages 1 through 54. There's got to be a ribbon out there for it. But there wasn't. And so I created one. You know, I just started doodling and called my graphic designer, my website designer, and said, hey, I'm going to send you something. Can you get this put in a digital format, and I'm going to get a bunch of them printed for the funeral? Well, man, we couldn't print them off fast enough. There were thousands of them. Everybody in town wanted one. They were putting them on their cars. They were putting them everywhere, and it just kind of went viral, you know. And it was then I realized, you know, there's such a big need for this that I think the seatbelt message had gotten lost in the shuffle of the texting and driving.
Remember, we were kids. It was in school. Like that in school.
Yeah, yeah. It's they not don't in do school it in school anymore. Anymore. They
who removed that? One, first of all, that was fun.
Yeah.
Student.
Yep, yep.
And then two, it took a burden off the parents. Like, because there's some the way it is now. Some of that stuff we did back in the 1900s is pretty legit.
Yeah, back in the 1900s. That was a whole century ago.
Too, right? About like don't mess with Texas.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
Oh, that was a great one. I don't know where that went.
Yeah.
And then the definitely the seatbelt one.
Mm-hmm.
The buckle up, you know, the
click it or ticket. Click it or ticket.
So click it or ticket, which I became a spokesperson for click it or ticket for the state of Texas.
That next year.
The following year, they chose Kaylee as the story they wanted to highlight for that campaign. And it ended up being the most successful campaign they've ever done. And so they ended up bringing us back the following year and did something different, you know, but it was still about Kaylee. And
well, that first year, as hard as it was very impactful because they would set up these bleachers, and on all the bleachers, they painted white tennis shoes.
So they collected a pair of tennis shoes from every death in Texas, right, from the families of every, so it was a pair of white shoes. They had these bleachers and it was all set up. They were all spray painted white. And then they used Kaylee's as hers were pink, and so hers kind of stood out. But to see that visual of all these empty pairs of shoes, and people should be standing in those shoes, you know, if they had been wearing their seatbelt. It was like 1,000 pairs of shoes, you know, and so that's just.
You know, I'd put like a kill switch in the car that activates with that seatbelt.
You know, the technology's there. It's
it's
there.
We have stuff on a different planet.
Right.
We're going to Mars, bro.
System. I mean, that's my point. Like, there is a Tesla floating in space.
My car dings if, even in the back seat, like if I have mine a box, does too. A heavy box or something sitting on a back seat, say, like, in a little thing, the
seatbelt. All the training that we do, all professional drivers, race car drivers, all professional pilots, first thing you do when you get in is you buckle it. When you get in the saddle,
learn to wear your seatbelt.
You put that on.
Yep, yep.
I mean, it's important for sure.
Yeah, it's like it's like this. You know, you're going to be in a crash at some point. I mean, most people, if you start driving when you're 16, you're going to be in a chances of you being in a crash by age 30 are almost 100%. And it might be a minor crash, it might be a major crash. You don't really get to decide that, but it's going to happen, and you'll probably be in a few crashes in your life. It's coming. You know, it's going to happen. It's like getting on a roller coaster and not putting that thing down, you know, that harness down. I mean,
well, that's a perfect example of why you want to have that on.
Yeah,
because if you've never been on a roller coaster, if you didn't have that,
yeah,
you, matter of fact, you don't even step on that sucker. You make sure that thing is on
there.
I double
check.
That's right. Same thing needs to apply when you jump in that car out there.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. You just click it and then you pull on it, see if you can
do it. Especially if it's got a motor in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And so, I mean, and by the way, you know, I know that click it or ticket is a big that has to do with enforcement. It's a big push that law enforcement does. It's also, you know, raising awareness, but it's you know, they're out there writing tickets.
Yeah, I get what you're saying.
Right.
It goes both ways, but I understand.
That's not what we're about.
Check. I get that. Yeah.
But you have to pair education.
I get it.
With enforcement to be effective.
Hey, you remember it like that too, because no one likes to get in trouble. They that's why we do it like that. It's like, hey, you either deal with the cop or you deal with death. Trust me, you don't want to deal with either one of those.
Right, right. And I, honestly, I never, like I said, I never wore my seatbelt before, and I could give two craps less about a ticket. You know, I'll pay every ticket you can throw at me. I would pay to have my daughter back. You know, and so I try to, that's the message that I try to, when I go speak at high schools or speak to groups of people, you know, I try, we're coming from a different perspective. It's like, who do you buckle up for at home that loves you, that's counting on you to make it home safe? You know, it's like somebody, there's somebody that cares deeply about you. There's somebody that is depending on you to make it home. And that's why you do it. You don't do it because really, you're going
to
get a ticket.
We're really trying to get them to really like, comprehend and understand and not come to them as like we're talking down to them. We're really trying to like really get them to think and understand like why it's important, not just because you get a ticket.
Yeah, no, it's
first question
at all.
Right.
Yeah.
It's part of the procedure.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's everything that you do in every part of your life. When you jump on that ride, you got to put that on.
Right.
Well, so at what point did y'all start the actual foundation?
It was pretty quick.
Almost immediately. I mean, we applied for I knew right away that I wanted to do a scholarship, you know, and I didn't the way that the foundation has evolved wasn't the initial concept. I mean, it has evolved into way more than we ever thought it would be. But it started off as, hey, I want to do a scholarship. That was immediate. Like that was within days. I want to do a scholarship. It's amazing what you think of when you're up for, you know, 48 hours or actually more. I think it was
that's when it comes in.
Yeah, I was up for like 3 days. I couldn't sleep, and so I'm just got all these thoughts racing through my head. How are we gonna carry out her legacy and things like that? But scholarship was one. I was like, you know, there's money that we were going to pay for college for her. You know, who are we going to help realize their dreams in her memory? And then after talking to that group of kids on the side of the road, I realized we need to raise more awareness. You know, we need to prevent other families from going through this tragedy. And so we threw our first big fundraiser a couple months after.
Well, someone threw a benefit for us.
Yeah, there was a
bareback.
A promoter. His name's Charlie Diggs. He put together this great lineup of artists that came out, and they did a lot of fundraising. They raised over $100,000, and they donated. I mean, it all got donated to the foundation. So it was kind of our kickstart. But we were getting money coming in from all over. We're like, what are we going to do with it? There's a lot of families out there hurting. You know that. So we want to prevent these tragedies, but we also want to be there when the tragedy does happen, you know, because these tragedies are going to happen. And so so we're kind of on both sides of the coin. And then we're also trying to develop our youth to grow up and become leaders. And you know, hopefully just by the way our scholarship is designed and the whole process, it achieves our mission by them raising awareness in their community. So which I want to talk about the scholarship for a second.
Yeah.
It's one of a kind. It's not really about, I mean, yes, grades are important. Test scores are important, but that's only about 25% of it. You know, they have to do a campaign. They have to put together a campaign that's measurable, that they can measure their impact in their community of how many people they reached. They have to conduct surveys. They have to do social media campaigns and come up with their own creative ways of reaching, you know, reaching people. And so, but then they also have to interview a parent or a set of parents that have lost their teenager in a car crash that wasn't wearing their seatbelts. And then they have to write an essay about it. So that whole process it changes their lives. It's something that they never forget, and they're able to make a huge impact. Whether they're the big winner of the whether they're the winner of the big scholarship, I don't think we've turned down any kid yet. I mean, everybody's gotten something for participating, But of course, there is those big scholarships. Last year, we were able to do a full ride scholarship. I hope we were able to continue that as every year. And so, that's something that we've grown. One of our programs that we've grown over the last several years. And then the family assistance thing is big. I mean, we're able to step in and help pay for funeral costs, medical costs. Send care packages. Just things that. That we know those families need, that because we've been through this. So we know, a big part of that was, I mentioned earlier that there was another kid that had passed away a couple weeks before our daughter. And his name was Tyler Spillman. And our daughter was very close with Tyler, and she was pretty tore up about it, but we didn't know Tyler. We didn't know his family. But we're at Kaylee's funeral, and Tyler's parents showed up and came and introduced themselves, and they're hurting. They just buried their son the week before, and here they are at our funeral, our daughter's funeral, supporting us, and that meant the world to us. I mean that and to be able to connect with somebody that's going through the same thing we're going through, we wanted to provide that and create that kind of community, and so that's really where the family assistance thing was. It was kind of inspired by that.
I think you're alone.
Yeah.
Yeah, we did.
That's the worst.
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, suffering's one thing. Suffering by yourself is completely different.
It's, yeah, and that, that and was you, such I mean, a game
changer.
You have
a lot of support, of people, but until you have been in that position, like, you don't really know, the
y'all part the of the ins club, everyone and, try, I mean, we don't talk about it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, I think it's brilliant. The scholarship is an incentive to keep your friends alive.
Yes.
And strangers. I mean, just
become champions.
No, yeah, there's no better advocate for that than other young people.
You know who preaches that?
So,
five and 6 year olds, first graders, second
They're
graders.
The most, they're the best.
The best.
The best.
You hit them with that and they take it straight to the house. It's all they have to talk about.
Yep.
All they have to talk about. And then they remember it as it's the one thing that gets stuck in their head.
I love
the same way with us. They hit us with those certain little deals, but at that, because the whole big screen's new to you and all the verbiage coming in, that's when you get them. With
those that. Kids are the most passionate.
They are.
And they're the best salespeople.
Best salespeople. They'll talk to strangers. They'll yell at somebody. Hey, Bucky, you see? Because it's good for you.
This year, we have an amazing crew that works for our foundation, and they really got into the elementary schools. Like, this year, I think, was probably our biggest.
Yep.
And those kids were so on it, and they would go home to their parents, and somewhere, some way we would meet some parents, and they're like, oh my gosh, like my kid.
They won't shut up about it. And they get to tell their parents what to do. Yeah. You need to wear your seatbelt.
When you're hearing it from a 7 year old.
If you ever wanted to yell at your parents at a young age, these are the things you can actually get away with.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Do it respectfully.
So right.
sir, ma'am, but absolutely.
No, it made it like even that much more, impactful, and ways for us to get to those adults who, are a little bit more stubborn.
Yeah. It's like, if you can convince a 6 year old, 7, 8, 9, 10 year old, I mean, it's going to affect everybody around them. They're going to take it to their friends, their family. Our school program, something we're very proud of. I mean, last year we were able to hit a milestone of getting at least one school district in all 50 states on board with our school program. And so now that we're pretty much nationwide with the school program, now we just need to grow that. And we want to be in, we want to be in every school. So that's our ultimate goal.
So do you have like a book on it, or what does the school program?
Well, there's different
like
levels.
Go into the school board and come down.
You have to get approval from the school.
Yeah.
And then we have speakers that go. There's a little video.
There's a virtual program. There's also a live in-person program.
And we have little coloring books and little
contests.
Yeah. Coloring contests, like just things like that.
We had a poem contest last year that was real successful.
They were actually really good.
And another thing we do in high school is seatbelt checks. And I think this is really cool because it gets, some of the student organizations, student council, student HOSA, which is, I don't know if you know what that is, but it's basically the future doctors and people that are going into the healthcare industry. these student clubs and organizations, we have the blueprint, and we'll go out and train them on how to do this, and partner with law enforcement, whatever law enforcement agency is kind of over that school district. Sometimes there's a parent that has lost a kid that those kids know, and we get them involved to where. So basically what it is we go and we take statistics. It's like a blind study of how many kids are wearing their seatbelts when they leave the parking lot of their high school.
Yeah.
And then we do the school program, and then we go back and we do another observation to see what the impact was. You know, when we first started it, it was more of a public, it was kind of more of a, I wouldn't say public spectacle, but it was more of a public thing where we had parents and students walking through the parking lots as the kids are waiting to get out of the parking lot, you know, talking to them. And it just was kind of chaos, and it was impactful, but it was like, all right, let's rethink this. And so these seatbelt checks are now really designed to see what the impact of our program is. And usually by the time we're done with the school program, it makes such a big difference. I mean, the percentage of the increase in seatbelt uses.
Oh, you got phenomenal. To incentivize kids. It's like, hey man, if like put that camera at the end, it's like if you guys go 3 semesters or 3 months with everyone wearing seatbelts, we'll give you a day off.
There you go.
I mean, you know, you get teenagers with that logic.
Oh, yeah.
Like, whoa.
Oh, yeah. Like, oh, okay.
Extra day of vacation. Okay, seatbelt on.
You're on to something.
And they will yell at each other if they don't do it.
You're definitely.
You can put a big screen up in the high school for when everyone's pulling in, they'll be like, let me catch somebody not wearing that damn seatbelt.
You know, that's a really good idea.
You know what I'm talking about? Because where I got that is the 82nd Airborne has a sign at the base. It says if they can go 82 days without killing somebody, they'll get a weekend off. I'm not kidding. We have this military. God bless the 82nd, man. They've been around a long time. They're just a tough breed, but whatever. But my point with that is like if you teach that, if you give them something like that, they'll just do it.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
That's period. I mean, it's they won't even motivation. Think twice about it. Motivation, you give them a day off every 3 months or whatever it is, they'll do it.
Yeah, or we could. What are the kids like these days? I mean, they're all into. I mean, back when Kaylee was, they love Starbucks. You know,
have something catered to the school,
right?
When you said something earlier,
Chick-fil-A, Raising Cane's.
Yeah.
I never thought about it. It's like when you have like a every day there's a teacher that comes in. That you have one class where there's a random teacher that comes in and teaches you something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One thing about like gun safety. One thing about car safety and stuff like that.
Yep.
But if you implement those kind of standards, and this is the only reason I know this works because it works with SEALs. Like the Alpha is the most elite. It's like you got to give them a bribe.
Yep. Yeah, bribe them.
You got to bribe them.
Yep. Hey, it's not. And it's
just
not.
What a, it is. I mean,
I bet kids are going to be kidding.
My wheels are turning now.
Yeah. I bet,
you know what I mean?
We're going to.
Chick-fil-A or Raising Cane's they would definitely partner with you.
Yes.
Yeah. And in fact,
actually, we do. Raising Cane's. Raising Cane's has been really good to us.
And then you make a competition between two schools.
There you go. Yeah.
And once you start doing that, because the social media makes it a lot easier to connect them, you can connect the screen. And have stats. You could make this like a wager thing. Like how many kids you've been. I'm just saying.
I'm glad this is recording because I'm going to go back and we're going to do some more brainstorming. We're going to have
these
a board meeting.
These kids are so freaking smart.
They are.
Like they're way ahead of us on that.
Yeah, let them figure it
we're
out.
We're the last of the getting your faces kicked in by the old, like having to figure it out kind of deal.
I mean, we don't know anything. If you ask my teenager, we don't.
Nothing.
Right. We don't know anything.
Nothing. I mean, teenagers, bro. I got a 12-year-old thinks I'm the dumbest son of a bitch on the planet.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if you've ever tried to.
He's looked at me like I don't know what that looks like. I give it all the time. And he gave it to me.
Yeah.
How about that? I got another one over here, too, man. Just probably way smarter than me, man. But, and her, too. But my point with that is remember when we were kids, though, if someone would have dropped that on us, I'd have been like, shit, man.
Yes, that is true. It's very true.
I mean, my parents didn't know anything either.
Yeah.
Not until I had kids. Then they became geniuses.
Gods.
Yeah.
My father is a god to me now. God rest his soul.
It's pretty incredible. You know that whole cycle of life, man. It's
bro, I mean, we're laughing, having a good time in here, but you're lost. Like when I said earlier,
no.
I speak, especially when death's around. I'm real funny about how I talk about it, but I mean, when you guys got into a club, a fraternity,
not one we asked to be on.
We never have to. Yeah, I can feel the weight in the heart, like because of that. But that daughter and the kid thing is completely different. That y'all, and not only did you deal with it, there's a saying we have. It's like, hey man, you're gonna get a cross put on you. you better pick it up and carry it, right?
Yeah.
How are you going to carry that sucker? Mm-hmm. And when y'all got y'all's put on you, they got the heaviest one of all. A child dying.
It's
only
I don't wish it on my worst enemy.
That's like a God pain. It's the best way I can describe that. And you guys did it magnificently. And the way you give back and you continue to honor her memory. And we all know who she is.
Mm-hmm.
So with that point, it's just, it's like taking a role as a parent for all of our kids. Because some of us, I heard something the other day that hit me like a ton of bricks. And I've seen this movie a million times. It goes, there's something far worse than a bad man down here. And it's the indifference of good men.
Mm.
And I didn't even know what that meant until recently. And when I heard it loud and clear when they said it that time. And I was like, oh okay. All right, yeah, all right. Good dudes rally up. And when we get hit, we don't go back down. We damn sure don't stand still.
Mm-hmm. No. I mean, I had a choice to make. You know, and it was either wallow in suffering and pain, which that's going to be there anyway.
Anyways.
It's going to be there either way. So, I mean, what are you going to do? You going to do something positive with it? Or are you going to just let it bring you down or let it destroy you? And I wasn't going to let it destroy me. I was going to, you know, the motivation for me was to make sure, and I'm sure I know you've heard this, but, you know, we all die two deaths. And then the first one is when we leave this earth, and the second one is when nobody remembers your name. And as a parent, I'm not going to let her die again. You know, I failed her the first time, and my, you know, dad's job is to protect their kids, and I feel like, you know, I don't know if I'll ever get over it, but feel like I let her down in that regard. But it's not going to happen again.
I mean, as a father, I got the look. That's a heavy weight. Look, if you had to get delivered to me for this one reason right at this very moment right there, don't put that weight on you, man.
Yeah.
No, it's tough, man.
And I've struggled with it. I get that. Because I'm standing here with you, and I don't know a pain that you know. But I can see
pain.
Your face, man.
Pain is pain.
Yeah, pain is pain, man. And however, get your ass there. Just don't do that part, all right, bro? I mean, for God's sakes. And how you know that is when you're sitting here describing how she went down, that blink of an eye a second, some of the angels down here only get a little bit.
You're right.
And then, no, I am right. This is how this works. They'll get pulled back quick. So the rest of us have to stay in here. So don't feel sorry for something that got pulled back early.
And there's nothing you could have
done. Nothing you could do about that.
That was.
You're right. And that's the one thing.
That is not on you at all, man.
I've played this scenario in my head. There's an infinite amount of choices that could have, you know, you just pick one. I mean, you can't play that game because who's to say that, you know, that all roads didn't lead to here anyway.
Right, right.
So we did that a long time. Sure, though, yeah. You know, and.
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, still, I will say.
You're always going to have your regrets, but, you know, that weight you have to, you know, like, you can't have that anymore. And that it's hard to, like, change that mindset.
No, but that is motivation for me is to make sure
that's a father thing. You can't pull that's ingrained in that.
Yeah, I don't know if I'll ever shake that, but yeah. I will say this. None of this would have been possible or, you know, if I wouldn't have forgave the kid that was driving the car. Mm-hmm. You know, that's finding forgiveness in your heart probably the hardest. I didn't know. You know, I get people that come to us and say, oh, I don't know how you do it. You know, and you probably heard this before. I don't know how you do it. I don't know how you do it. Man, if you'd asked me 6 years ago and you'd have told me your daughter's going to, you're going to lose your daughter and you're going to go on to do great things and you're going to go on to do this and that and build this amazing foundation and company and all this stuff, I would have said, you're crazy. If I lose my daughter, that's the end of me. You know, that's the mentality that I would have had. So I get it when I hear people say, I don't know how you do it because I'm with you. I don't know if I would have been asking the same questions 6 years ago. So,
well, he was not in the very beginning.
No, it wasn't right away.
Told the family, like, you're not coming to the funeral. Like, I don't want to see you. I don't want to anything. Mm-hmm. But we also are.
Start talking about like after. I get that.
I wanted him dead.
I understand that.
I mean, that's just the instinct thing, right?
That's just part the instinct of the whole thing.
Was it the kid that was white
the,
at I get the
that.
Scene?
That's normal, man.
That yes. you're saying that yes, was...
that was him. He yeah. was the driver.
But and, I will say this. I love that kid with everything. I mean, he's a big part of our family. I mean, like, his family and our family are close. And I, you know, we want the best for that kid. And
he loved Kaylee.
He loved
so much.
He loved
they
our daughter.
Close,
there's nothing I can do to make it worse yeah. that he's already put on himself.
Right.
You know
I mean, he suffers more than
we've tried everything to try to, you know, and he's doing well, you know, and I'm glad he is, but he struggles. And we try to do anything we can to, you know, lighten that load for him. But
did you pull it off of him?
Oh yeah, I mean, absolutely.
No. You sat him down, looked him square in the face.
Absolutely, I hug, gave him a big hug, and told him I loved him, and I talked to him.
It was actually the day of the funeral. Said, "I'm calling him. He needs to come."
All right.
I was like, "We're not going into
he
this
won't
funeral
shake that unless you do that."
Yeah,
I'm not right, going into right. this funeral with hatred in my heart. I'm going to send my daughter off to the Lord and to be in heaven, and I'm not going into this with hatred in my heart. And I thought about all the bad things that I've done in life,
yeah.
all the mistakes that I've made, all yeah. of the, I've done way worse and got away with it, you know, and done way stupider things than that, you know, it just didn't go his way, you know, so my whole life flashed before my eyes. I'm sitting there shaving, getting ready for the memorial service. And I'm thinking to myself, it just, all those bad things I've done, all those stupid choices that I've made and got away with. And I was like, you know what? It's not fair. I'm a Christian. What is the foundation of my faith is it's the Lord's Prayer is forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us, you know? And it's like, how can I stand before God and ask him to forgive me if I'm not willing to forgive? And that was the end of it. That all played through my head in a moment's time, and I looked at her. I said, "I know what I need to do right now." She was like, "They're all looking at me like I'm crazy." Like, they're like, "What are you talking about?" I was like, "I'm calling Jared's dad right now," and called him up. Said, "I want you to know that I forgive your son. I want him to know that. If he wants to come, pay his respects, say his goodbyes, we're gonna welcome him with open arms. We're going to love on him. We're going to tell him it's going to be okay. We forgive him, you know." And that was the first step, you know, that's towards us, you know, finding any kind of peace and comfort and healing. So, I encourage anybody out there that's listening to this, if there's somebody in your life that you're holding hatred or a grudge on, just please consider forgiving that person. I mean, doesn't mean you have to be friends with them. Doesn't mean you have to, be a part of their lives, but just let it go.
Yeah.
It's going to eat you up. So.
How's your son doing?
I mean, I would love to say that he's doing great. You know, he struggles. I mean, I feel like he's a little lost.
He compartmentalized it for a long time. So he became very quiet, everything was internalized. And it's honestly been just recently, we've found an amazing therapist and she's really like helping him, and he's like, "I'm ready to start working through it." And so that, you know,
he's had his struggles. This last year has been tough for him, but you know, he's just I think he's shoved everything down for so long and hasn't really processed it, and kind of through therapy he's learning a lot about himself. And I think one of the things we've learned is that he always, you know, he was doing this. He felt like he was doing his part.
Trying to be strong.
By being strong and not putting anything else on his parents that he sees them struggling. And so he just tried to shove it all down for too long. And it just
kind of. You know, you got a good one.
Yeah. I mean, he's a great kid.
If he swallowed that,
he's got a big heart.
Then let that out of it. That's exactly what that is.
He's a great young man. And I think he's got a bright future.
Yeah, just get him back out there. Kick him in the butt. Get him talking.
Yeah.
You know, and that's been the other struggle.
You got to kick him in the ass and get him back out
there. Well, that's...
If that's what he did, that's what that is, he'll be fine.
Yep. And that's, you know, and that's been a struggle. It's not fair to him that, you know, we are parents that are trying to parent him with the fear of, you know, we've already gone through it once. And it's and so we...
Because now he's driving.
Does that,
exactly. I never even thought of it that way.
How about that? You know, I'm talking about, like, that's got to hit him hard, too. So,
yep.
Reciprocates.
Well, now, I think whenever... he turned 17. That was 4 days, you know, after, well, she was, he realized that he now has outlived her.
Mm.
And I think that really that hit him.
That was a trigger for him.
Yes, that really hit him hard. And David and I struggle because I am like, you know, I'm very fearful. So I'm like, you know, staring at my life 360. I'm like so much on top of him.
Oh, she's hawking him. I'm like, man, you got to let it go,
and he's
baby.
Like, okay, like you're going to have to like pull back because you're driving him crazy. You know?
It's not fair to him, you know.
So I've been having to try to kind of learn that too. You know, it's scary, but you know, you can't.
But it's always going to be there, especially if you've been down. Now it's real for us. It's like, you know, a lot of parents are, you know, it's never going to happen to me. And we never in a million years thought it would happen to us. But now that it has, and we realize that this is real, and it just puts a whole new level of fear in you. But, you know, it's something, you know, I think we're doing all right.
What advice do you give to other families that have lost children? We have really close friends that have lost a child. And there's this struggle that marriages go through mm-hmm. after that. And a lot of them don't make it.
Right.
What do you suggest? Therapy.
I was never a guy, never really into that. Just wasn't into it, but it got to a point where it was like, I don't want to lose you. Let's figure this out. Let's figure out how to communicate with each other.
Communication is a big one because he didn't want to say things that would upset me and I didn't want to say things that would upset him. So we just kind of didn't really talk a whole lot. But therapy, they, you know, they deal with grief and things like that. And so they can help you with tools.
Give you the tools. I mean,
to like take out and, you know, practice at home. And it has really helped us a lot.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, I've never been a fan of, you know, sitting on a couch, pouring my heart out or anything, but like it's when it comes to her, I mean, she's my everything. She's and this is worth fighting for and worth doing whatever it takes to make this last.
Takes pain for them,
mm-hmm.
But you're right.
They take pain for us.
Yeah,
you're right. I mean, I mean that. Yeah, when you go through something tough in your life, it puts a strain on all your relationships. And yeah.
I think it's communication and grace. You know, because David and I also don't grieve the same way, so you kind of have to give each other grace, you know, and understand, like, this is what you need, and I'm going to be here for you, even though maybe it's not what I want to do, or you know.
That's a great point.
So,
well, and you're never going to be in sync on where you're at.
I didn't think about that. Most couples, when you meet and you get together and you get married, the one thing you haven't gone through together is that part.
Yeah.
Yep.
The grief.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's like we almost tell them, get a puppy first. Yeah. Just to see how one reacts, right. So you can learn. Because yeah. Because I get quiet when I get pissed.
Right.
Yep.
Something bad comes out of me, you know, guys like us, we shut down.
Yeah. I'm
and that's just because you don't want to hear what comes out of that.
Yeah. You don't want to regret what you're
exactly,
about to say.
I mean, we have the ability to change the way you completely look at me.
Yeah.
Right.
And when you have that kind of ability, then you got to learn how to like keep it in the holster, sheath that weapon, because we grew up like that.
Right.
And when you put us in a situation like that, we can't physically fight.
Yeah.
That's immediately taken away from us.
Yeah, that's off the table.
But we got to get it out of there somewhere. And the ones around us are the ones we love the most. This is the hardest thing for guys like us, man.
I will say, like, the understanding that, like, there is moments where I'm okay and she's not, or vice versa. And, just being there, just being there for that person and learning, yeah, like knowing when to keep your mouth shut,
yeah,
you know, but not over, trying to find that there's a fine line. There's got to be a balance. It's like, when do I keep my mouth shut and when do I say something? And so those are the kind of things that we went to therapy to learn. And I think it's really helped us. So to answer your question, I'm not an expert. I know what's, the best advice that I would have is work on your communication.
Yeah.
You know, work on how to communicate with each other effectively and find out what needs need to be met on both sides.
Well, thank y'all for sharing your story. I mean, that I cried through the whole thing.
I'm sorry.
I'm highly emotional.
You. What do we need to do? To
yeah,
make
how
sure
can
that...
people help your foundation?
The best way I think is go to KayleeMillsFoundation.org. And everything's on there. It shows everything we've done. It has dates on there for things that are coming up. It talks about the scholarships, about Kaylee.
I mean, the best way that people can help us is by having a conversation, you know, with their loved ones about
buckling up.
Yeah. You know, it's really, you know, ask yourself why. You know, you always got to find out what is your why? Why do you do this? What or who? Who in your life would miss you the most if something happened to you? And that's how, I mean, raising awareness is just, it's about creating conversations and reminding people what's important. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're on social media, you know, YouTube, whatever, you know, Facebook, Instagram, whatever else is out there. I'm sure we have, you know,
it's grown a lot bigger than y'all know.
Yeah. I mean, that's an honor to know that. And we hear these stories. This is another motivation, is hearing these stories of people that reach out and they say, hey, I was in a crash and I had my seatbelt on, and I may not have had my seatbelt on had I not heard your story, you know? And so that's the fuel that keeps us going. So
a glimpse into the future of how many lives your daughter would have touched, right? She's still doing that.
I would have never imagined that. Never would have imagined. And yeah, I'm excited to see where this thing goes in the next.
She must have been something.
Mm-hmm. She definitely was.
And I will say this, the community that rallied around this thing it's not because of me.
Right.
It's not because of her. No. It's because of who she was. Yeah. And she was just a genuine person.
Every time I talk about her, I'm like, I wish you'd have gotten to know her. Like, she was awesome.
Yeah.
And I know everybody probably says that about their kids, you know?
Yeah, every parent thinks that about their kids. And I'm not discounting that or saying that our kid's better than anybody else's, but
she definitely was someone that you would remember for sure. Like, just, she was that, she had that personality.
Well, that's who God takes, too, to teach lessons and to very help true. Others.
And that is a lesson that I have really struggled with, but I'm really starting to come to terms with, you know, this is what she's meant to do, you know? Like, this is her purpose.
She is able to impact way more lives now than I think she would have had she lived out her life. Yeah.
A marker.
Yep.
Yeah.
It hits harder when something like that gets removed.
Yes.
With the losses that he's endured in the SEAL teams, a lot of the guys, I mean, they were just like the best guys.
Yeah.
So you got to take what they stood for.
Yeah.
Like, each one of them bring out one thing in there.
Yeah.
Like the guy's like, hey, when that sucker walks in, you know something happens to you.
Right.
Like it can just light you up.
Yep.
And if you're lucky enough to come across them, be around them is the best.
Exactly. 100%.
If you're fortunate enough. Most of us aren't fortunate enough to be around them. So when they finally get taken back, you got to take what they left you.
Right.
That's the only reason why they're here. Mm-hmm. When they say, when we're growing up, it was like, hey, man, you just got a sign to watch out for her.
Yeah.
That's Jesus' kid.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So like, she was only here. We got to make sure this is what we do. They're here for this amount of time. We don't even know that.
Right.
How long they're here for.
Nope. We don't get to decide that either.
Decide that, and don't play it off like, oh, I would have been paying attention more. Don't put that on you either.
Yep.
Right.
It's just like, man, get done what gets done. And then when she's removed, which by the way you sound, by the way you told me of what happened, that's exactly, sounds to me like she was a blessing to have her. And she got pulled out quickly.
Yeah. I mean, I would give anything to have her back.
Sure.
But but at the same time, you know, making the best out of a terrible situation is a choice. And that's the choice we've made.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Well, thank y'all again for coming on. I want to thank Lou Matasso, too, for introducing us to y'all for the podcast.
Ava Lucia, thank you so much.
Of course.
Yes.
I'm really thankful that y'all were able to make it out today and took time out of y'all's very busy schedule, especially just, you know, the new year being right around the corner. I really just want to thank y'all for coming out and doing this for me and for everyone that's going to be watching this.
Speaking of New Year, I wanted to ask y'all a question. You know, what is something that you want to start doing in 2024, stop doing, and continue doing? And I'll let you answer that, Ava, Lucia.
Oh, shoot. Definitely just being, I guess I want to continue being just a positive person and in my friends' lives, my family's lives, and everything like that. Being that person that someone can lean on in difficult situations has always been something that I loved being there for people. So that's definitely something I want to continue and get better at. Probably something I'm going to leave in 2023 is doubting myself. I have a lot of issues with that, but I think it's time. You know, I turn 18 in literally 10 days. So wow. It's time that I put those childish kind of things away and I start coming into myself as an adult.
That's awesome. That's perfect.
Don't get too much of in a rush to grow up. Put it that way.
She's way more grown up than I ever was even close to being when I was her age.
Yeah.
She's way ahead of me too.
I remember seeing them when we were growing up.
Yeah.
How long y'all known each other?
Since a while now. She was probably 9 or so.
Oh, she tutors my kids.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. She tutors the little ones. And this is not a knock on our teachers, but the teachers have asked me what's different in their lives because they couldn't teach them how to learn these math problems, but she can get them to figure it out. And she's amazing.
Have you seen how they do math these days?
That's why I couldn't.
I can't.
Our own teachers can't even teach them. But she's able to sit down with the kids, and they went from damn near failing to all A's just in a few months of during quarantine, her tutoring them.
But if you want a kid to learn something, really put a kid a little bit older than them or a young adult in the room with them, and they'll pick it up quick.
Yeah.
Mainly because they want to look cool. They'll go pay attention to when she walks in the door. Kids are like, "Hey, what's up?"
Yeah,
right.
Yep.
And she says something like, "Oh, I got that." I'm like, "I tried to beat that in your head for an hour."
That's not just with academics. That's with sports too. Anything. I mean, anything. Yeah. Yep.
If you just put those kids a little bit, that's why the mentorship, and that's probably why we put them in grades next to each other as well, right? But it's sure enough.
But I do think there's something special about Lou because we had so many tutors come in and out of our doors before her. Like I hired online, like all these different private tutors. Nothing got to them. But she not only explained it to where they were passing, she explained it to where they know how to do it and they can progress to the next thing without her now. Yeah. So...
Do you have any time for teach tutoring? You.
I know, right?
Yeah.
Can I hire you?
Yeah. She's so good at it. So I'm excited to see where she goes.
Yes.
She wants to go to law school and do all the things, and I'm excited to watch her grow.
Yep.
Start, stop, continue.
Yeah.
What are some things that you'd want to start doing, stop doing, and continue doing in 2024?
Starting back to school.
Yeah, we want to start school. On that. What are we gonna stop doing?
But procrastinating on not getting back in there.
Well, but we never really started. Committed.
Yeah. It's a tough question for us.
Yeah, this was something we learned a few years ago that we've really gotten comfortable with, but it took us a while. Is saying no, because
that's hard.
It's very hard because we're both givers.
Yep.
And we were at the point. I mean, from the time we got married up until a few years ago, we were giving so much that it was draining us and our family. And with y'all being in this role of nonprofit work, you can understand that. Mm-hmm. It's bigger than you, but you feel like you have to keep up.
Yeah.
And it was really taking a toll. And everyone that we love and friends with would ask us to do something, and all the things are special and meaningful. And we were saying yes to just accommodate everybody else. And it was probably 2 years ago or so. And I was like, we have to stop. We're going to burn ourselves out if we don't stop. And even though we're going to come across mean or whatever, and people did not like it, but we're finally at a pace that we're comfortable with. And so even though it's a few years old, that was the biggest thing in our lives. Where, and I have to say no for him because he doesn't like saying
right.
no.
Yeah.
So I'm the bad guy, and he'll say, "You have to ask my wife." And then I'm like, "No." The answer is no.
She took the schedule.
Yeah, there you go.
Brilliant.
She's the calendar lady in our family.
Brilliant, because I really can't do anything. Like I can't make a move, because if I say yes and something else on the books, then so they automatically have to kick over and talk to her.
And people get really upset, but when you're asking us to go to New York or California or whatever, and we're having to pay our own way, and we're having, and yes, it is for a good cause.
Right.
I believe in your cause. I think it's awesome. What you're doing for people is awesome. But
there's so many out there.
There's so many out there, and we're having to take away from our little ones.
Correct.
We're missing their basketball games. We're missing their volleyball games.
Right.
All of this kind of stuff.
When you look up and you're at some guy's kid's basketball game and not your own kid's basketball game while they're playing.
Yeah, that's time to
kind of like
time to rethink things.
I think the giving things done.
Right. We would go to these events and they would have us tag along to other things, and we realized,
wait a minute,
they're just having us do their family things. They're not leaving their work to come do our family stuff.
That's a good point.
So we finally had to just say no. So for our stop, it happened a few years ago, but we're finally in that comfortable zone of just being like, you know what? Our family is priority.
Exactly. And that's
the
way.
And somebody asked me this question yesterday, and that's why I was like, it was so impactful. It took me a while to think about it, but I was like, one of the things I want to stop doing is putting work and foundation stuff above what's right here in front of me, is my family and God. And then, continue being committed to the success of my team, but you can have it all. You can do both. There's a way that you can have it all. It's just.
God, dude, I heard some guy saying this the other day, and I've always said it as if I don't care if you're being a billionaire or a biker. And they all like to sit around a campfire at the end of the day and talk stories and stuff like that. And then I heard something about an old fisherman, the old Japanese fishing story. He's like, this guy walks up. He's like, hey, you need to get some people to work for you. Catch more fish so you can feed more people, so you can earn a lot of money, so you can sit around and just fish by yourself. And dude's like, hey, I can do that by myself.
Exactly. I'm already doing that.
You make it exactly really hard, and then we get ahead of ourselves.
Yeah.
Is that Mr. Miyagi?
Yeah. I'm watching that man, believe it or not. Right? A's movies were the best.
They were the best.
We were watching those shows yesterday, all the Karate Kids.
So for Christmas, like December, we got just Christmas movies. And then January, we were talking about this the other day. What do you watch for January? So I make it, it's James Bond, January.
Nice.
Hey, I've been wanting to do that. I have in my notes on my phone, like, movies to watch
we
with Logan.
We kicked off the New Year's
because
with a James
Bond
movie.
They were so much better.
Yeah, James Bond January.
So much better.
You can throw some Mission Impossible in there if you want to mix it up. But there's 25 or 26.
And go all the way. There's so many of them.
So there's
James
one,
Bond?
James Bond.
Wow.
So there's one a day. You can just put it on repeat.
Right. Together.
And then it covers. And then in February rolls in. That's like romance. So you can get all that. There's every month, I think, especially with America. I've appreciated this more and more. When you're kids, you don't have any concept of time. But here in the United States, we've dropped holidays in perfect timing. Like right about the time you've been working too hard, you're like, hey, we got one.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
And then movies go in that.
Mm-hmm. Max asked me the other day, what's our next holiday? And I said, Valentine's Day. He goes, no, like a holiday that everybody celebrates across the world. I'm like, Valentine's Day? Why wouldn't they celebrate Valentine's Day?
I
was like,
I forget sometimes that not everybody celebrates Christmas. It's, I mean, like, that's not a thing in Asia. That's not really a thing,
This is a pretty good place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the best.
When they say the American way, and we do have a way, if you can slip into it, if you can break into it, if life pushes you into it, like if we somehow, American, like you get crushed into our way of life and you get in there, you can see it. It's magical.
Until you get out of this country and go visit other countries, I don't think you can
truly
fully
appreciate
what we got here.
Mm-hmm. And we like to travel, but we always like to come home.
Yeah,
especially if you get in trouble.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I don't
hey, when we show up, like the biggest thing is when you pick up that phone, you call, there's someone on the other end that'll show up in a uniform to identify themselves as to help you.
Mm-hmm.
In either a big red truck or a police cruiser or something. I mean, that's built on nothing more than just trust and love.
Yeah. Yeah.
Money can't buy all that, nothing.
Yeah.
We have that here. And it's very fragile.
Yeah.
And it's almost the glue that holds it together are the tragedies of the families that we live beside. Mm-hmm. And I mean, when some of us have to go out and do this while the others, doesn't matter where I had to go to suffer. I left this country to suffer. I came back. You're suffering harder than I was.
I don't know about that.
So now we're sitting here having to go through this together.
Yeah.
So I know at two points of contact, man, there's some glue in there that's damn strong. It won't let this place break.
Yeah. Well, service always comes from tragedy. I mean, the reason people get up and do something to
that
help
is, so true.
Is because something
somewhere.
Is broken mm-hmm. somewhere.
And there's a fixer in there somewhere that wants to fix it.
Yeah.
That's
amen.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
That's the people, the best tools. Treasures, magic, that's why we got different words for them. Like when that one shows up, It's magical what they do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And some of them show up, it's terrifying.
Yeah. You don't want that guy showing up.
Especially with them. That's a real thing.
Well, thank y'all for coming on.
Thank you guys so much.
Thank you so much for having us.
We appreciate you.
Happy New Year, everybody.
Yeah, Happy New Year.